Yeah, it has to do with many of the different topics that have already been addressed, but it's still very different, so it's nice to see that some things are shared with the previous topics. Here it is. So it's not just a musical phenomenon which I'm going to talk about, because there are also many other things that have to be taken into account, especially if we consider that this sort of music belongs to this sort of ritual performance and procession. It's not a sort of music that might be subjective to, that might be commodified, for instance. So it does receive the influence of many other genres, so many things influence this kind of music, but it doesn't happen the same vice versa. So it's like it's a genre that remains specific for this sort of ritual context, which is a typical religious procession from northwestern Argentina, and has deeper roots in the rest of the Andes, in the Andean world, ranging from Ecuador to the south of Bolivia, and the northwest of Argentina, and north of Chile, and all of Peru. So I'm going to talk about the Sicuri Pampa bands and their participation in religious processions. There are different local advocations of the Virgen de Copacabana, which is actually at the same time an advocation of the Virgen de la Candelaria. Copacabana is a Bolivian town by the shore of Lake Titicaca, and this lake, it's also worth mentioning that it plays a central role in the Inca myth of origin. So this case study, it's hard to analyze the identity construction processes from the past, and also the negotiations that have taken place and that are still taking place nowadays. Maybe the process that we will see along the 20th century is more easily to be defined than the changes that that have been occurring since the 70s, 80s, and more especially during the 90s. With many of these aspects, it's like the agency behind certain symbolic actions seems to be quite clear, and in other cases is more elusive. Since the elements displayed are linked to a wide range of imageries, in many cases globalized, and some other influences from different parts are appropriated and reused. We can think of this a bit as a bricolage, but also as a palimpsest. They create new things from different elements that they appropriate, but at the same time, all of those elements they can be, you can read through them to certain interpretations and appropriations of the past, which is of course also negotiated from the present. Just to give you an idea, this is the area that we're talking about in South America, and the Quebrada de Mahuaca would be, well, actually those middle spots over here. Yeah. Jujuy is the northernmost province of Argentina, bordering Bolivia and Chile. A great part of its surface consists of the Puna grasslands and the Andean plateau and the highest mountains of the Andean range, of the Andes range. So we have mainly here focused on the pilgrimages that take place from Tilcara, which is a city, a village actually, that has grown quite a lot in the past few years due to a growth of tourism, especially since the Quebrada de Mahuaca was declared a World Heritage by UNESCO, right? So the Quebrada de Mahuaca is a narrow valley that stretches for over 100 miles from north to south, dividing the highlands of Jujuy in two different parts. A river flows through it, and most of the towns, Humahuaca, Tumbaya, and Tilcara, they are all near the river in the middle of the quebrada. It is also a corridor that connects different ecoregions and environments, the Puna Highlands, the Altiplano, and the southern and eastern valleys, and the Junga forests, that's like a rainforest, a jungle, much lower. And it has also been traditionally a corridor, very important as a part of the Inca trail, and also for cultures previous to the Inca times. Oops, one before. So I wanted to tell you a little bit about the siku. It's actually a paired panpipe. This instrument is actually split into two complementary halves, and you can see that the scale is divided between both instruments. So they are meant to be played by two persons or two different groups of people. So the notes of the scale are partially on one instrument and partially on the other one. Nowadays, they use normally diatonic scales. In the past, there were pentatonic scales. You can already see that in the Nazca and Moche cultures, sorry, this thing is not very sensitive, already 2,500 years before the present, they were being used. You can see in many vases and archaeological findings that they are already pictured. There are even some researchers who attribute... Oh, that's really sensitive, this thing. They actually give an interpretation to the Nazca lines as maybe they were probably used by panpipe players in their processions, and they were like drawing the whole itinerary where they were marching. So this sorts of pilgrimages and processions while playing panpipes are very common throughout the Andes. You can see here some other more recent basins, and this one is even a bit more recent. You can see that it's also holding a drum. So now we will go to even more recent times, just to see how a band from the northwest of Argentina from nowadays might look like. But we will see that, of course, there are also many other different sorts of clothing and things that have to do with the construction of a certain imagery. And it's not just the music, but it goes along with many other things. And what I want to show is the influence of the state and the different changes in the history during this process. Well, let's start a little bit with the early days. This procession, the first registers of this devotion of the Virgen de Copacabana in the area date from 1640. There was an icon of the Virgin sculptured in Humahuaca. According to oral history, a couple of centuries later, in 1835, a shepherd saw an apparition of the Virgin in Punta Corral. And then there's a gap of almost a century once more, and we finally get to the formation of the first Sicuri Pampai bands in Tilcara. And since then, since 1930 till nowadays, they gather here in this church in Tilcara, and they head up to the mountains to a procession in the Abra de Punta Corral. You will sometimes see that I might refer to the Punta Corral and Abra de Punta Corral, because actually there was a divide, there was a fight about status involving the towns of Tilcara and Tumbaya, and the procession that usually connected Tilcara and Tumbaya through the sanctuary of Punta Corral, in 1971 there were already 8 Sicuri bands going up there, and this conflict of interests, it was a fight about status and local power, also regarding the property of the icon of the Virgin. Tensions and splits have to do with those claims about status and pride and such disputes. And some icons, I should mention, that are privately owned, while others belong to the Roman Catholic Church. So there was this fight in 1971, and one family decided not to go through Tilcara anymore. So the next year, a new icon of the Virgin appeared, and this time it was in the hands of the Catholic Church. It's really interesting to see how this developed. There's always a hierophany, a narrative to explain why they worship a certain icon, and it's amazing how fast this happens. So the following year, in 1972, with this new advocation, already with an official name, the Virgen de Copacabana del Abra de Punta Corral instead of Punta Corral, it just... just a second. Sorry. Yeah. How many? 5? Okay. So guess which of the processions grew the most? The one that was the traditional one or the new one? Well, actually, the new one gained many more followers than the previous procession. It actually nowadays is one of the biggest. But let's go back to the beginning, to the 1930s, 1940s. The first bands, they were many consisted of people that came from the highlands or from Bolivia, and it was a time when all the boundary setting between the different countries, Bolivia and Chile and Argentina, was at the discussion, and also Argentina was trying to make a claim on some lands. So many of the people that came from Bolivia, they were accused of being not Argentinian enough, of having an Argentinidad imperfecta, or imperfect Argentineness. So they started using many symbols, like the ones that we're seeing here, allowing them to become, even till nowadays, you can see this picture, I took it like 4 years ago, some bands, they still use like military icons and imagery. So all the names of the bands and all the also the use of snare drums and bass drums, even though there were some other similar drums in the Andean world, they chose these ones instead. So you can see how some things have been shifting through the years. Also in the 70s they started using more things like, well, that Red Cross helmet that you can see over there, well, was a band that used to also wear military costumes and everything, but then they decided to show another belonging that also represented them, which was actually something more related to their work at the local hospital and to their class position as nurses and people working at public institutions. More frequently, some Andean comebacks started to appear. They started to also, sometimes in the form of invented traditions, sometimes also they are accused for inventing traditions, and there are also some political claims regarding those things, such as, for instance, with the Wifala flag. As you can see over here, it's a flag that is mainly from the Aymara people, but it is supposed to have appeared in the 40s, and it was also supposed to be inspired. That's what they're accusing some people now of, like inventing a tradition based on the logo of a soft drink from La Paz in Bolivia, that also had like little colors squares. And you can see also the Vatican flag next to it, and also you can see the shirt of the Inter from Milan, worn by other bands. So you can see that throughout the years many different influences start to take shape. So you have the state telling the people that they are not Argentinian enough, so they choose certain icons to prove their loyalty, and that is, well, the names of the bands, they're all patriotic names, and also the clothing. And then in the 70s they shift more towards a manifestation of class belonging, and in the 80s we can start seeing a bit of everything. 80s and 90s already some Andean comebacks and reappropriations of imagery belonging to the Andean world and to a pan-aboriginal sense of belonging take place, and also some reinterpretations of certain things, like, for instance, no one knows exactly the use of this plane is like a rattle that they use. I'm going to show just a little video in a moment to close with my presentation, but I want to tell you first a story with that very same plane that you can see over there. I was doing this research with a colleague of mine who's almost as tall as I am, and most of the people at the procession were much shorter than we were, and the uncle of the boy who's holding that rattle came with that plane and started hitting us, and everyone was laughing. We couldn't understand why. So we think, hey, come on, stop, you're annoying, what are you doing? He said, yeah, the Twin Towers. So some people say that this plane in the past was a condor, but there are no pictures or anything about the condor. So I want to show you how it's used. Now again, the same that happened before it, I guess. Wow. Well, this is how it also sounds. It sounds very military. There are marches, and also the structure of the bands. Well, but well, even though the repertoire keeps on changing and they keep trying new rhythms, like for instance cumbia, for a long time it was like forbidden, it was banned not just by the band members, but also sometimes by the church, and that's really important also at the local scale. During the 80s and part of the 90s, the priest at the local parish, he was more open-minded. He was from the theology of the liberation, and so during those years is when also some other rhythms started to be appropriated by the local bands. And now recently they are a bit more hardcore, the new priests, and it has just been reported to me by my fellow researcher who has just been with the procession last month, that the church demanded for strict silence in certain moments of the procession, which is something that normally is not respected. And for one of the first times, they managed to control the thousands of people and thousands of bands that go playing on the same time. So you can see also that some global things have an influence, and also some things that are more like parochial, you might call them.